Good morning and welcome to Perspectives. Today we're talking about efforts to protect and care for the many animals living throughout North Florida. We'll be talking about everything from advocating for and supporting the animals in your neighborhood to considering adoption to helping wildlife recover after a major storm. Joining us in the studio are Michael St. John, Assistant Director of Animal Services for the City of Tallahassee, Lisa Glunt, Director of the Leon County Humane Society, Ralph DeMeo, Chief Executive Officer of Pets Ad Litem, and Sandy Beck, Education Director at St. Francis Wildlife. And please remember you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234 or call us at 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area. You can also send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. Thank you all for joining us today. I'm really excited to dig into sort of how we go about protecting the animals in our communities. I think a great way to start is just by going around the table here briefly and letting you all introduce yourselves. Ralph DeMeo, I'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, especially with my friends here who really are my heroes because of the great work they do for animals. I'm a partner in the Tallahassee law firm of Baker Donaldson, which has been very supportive of my animal welfare efforts. I'm also the chair emeritus of the Florida Bar Animal Law Section, which is the lawyers in the state of Florida who deal with animal welfare issues. And we started Pets Ad Litem about 15 years ago in order to provide humane education and legal support to the city's animal services center. And that's what we primarily do.
All right. Lisa Glunt.
Good morning. So I'm Lisa Glunt with the Leon County Humane Society. I have actually had the privilege of working with Michael at the Tallahassee Animal Service Center several years ago, and with Ralph also on projects through Pets Ad Litem. And Sandy, I look highly to with her wildlife work. I'm just excited to be here today.
Thank you for being here. Michael, how are you?
Oh, good. Good morning. Yes, I'm Michael St. John, Assistant Director at Tallahassee Animal Services, and that's the shelter in Tom Brown Park that everybody knows about. We basically are the only shelter for Leon County and Tallahassee, and really a three-county area. We're the largest shelter, so we get a lot of animals from all sorts of places. And again, I've worked with all these people very closely with Sandy as far as wildlife, because we don't take wildlife, and people have injured birds and raccoons and things, and so we refer them to her. With Leon County Humane Society, we take some of their animals, they take some of ours. We work very closely together. And I'm actually a part of PAL as well, and have worked with Ralph with PAL and on the Animal Crimes Task Force.
All right. And Sandy Beck, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My name is Sandy Beck, and I'm the Education Director with the St. Francis Wildlife Association. And I've worked with them for 31 years now. And we, St. Francis Wildlife, cares for about 3,000 injured, orphaned, and sick wild birds and animals in our community every single year. And I use some of the non-releasable animals, birds of prey and reptiles. I take them into the schools. They're my partners. And we teach children and adults what they can do to help wildlife.
Very good. And it looks like we've already got a caller who's ready to join us on our show here. So we'll go ahead and go straight to our call. Brian, hello and welcome to Perspectives.
Hi there.
Hi, do you have a question for our panel?
I did. I adopted a feral kitten that was rescued by one of the local rescue agencies, and it was a pet adoption at a pet store. Fell in love with the kitten immediately. The thing is that I've heard that it's much better for cats to leave them inside, that they have much longer lifespans that way. But my cat has an intense desire to escape, because when he goes on the porch, he can see birds and things, and he wants to get out. I don't allow him to do that. Am I doing the right thing here? This is what I want to know.
All right, Brian, thanks for your question. Michael, it looked like you were nodding a little bit as he was asking that question. Do you want to jump in here?
Sure, and I'm certainly not the only person with cat knowledge here at the table. But, you know, I would say certainly cats are much safer inside, as you said. They're not going to be victims of predator animals or cars or things like that. You know, having said that, I understand that, you know, they're animals that want to go out and explore and things like that. And I mean, one thing that you can do sometimes is try to create an enclosed area. If you have, like you say, you have a screen porch, that's great. At least they get outside. The danger in letting them out is that, again, cats tend to explore. There's other bigger animals that are interested in them, and they're also susceptible to disease when they're outside. So, if your animal hasn't been altered, we'd certainly recommend doing that. That helps a little bit sometimes with the roaming instinct, and they can be a little more sedentary and happier inside.
Mm-hmm. And Sandy, I imagine that might be an issue that you'd like to weigh in on as well, maybe from a different perspective, not from the cat's perspective.
Oh, right. Well, I totally agree with Michael that cats are safer inside. There's a pretty a substantial problem with cats and small dogs being outside and becoming prey for coyotes, great horned owls, red-tailed hawks, and also they do quite a bit of damage to wildlife. Last year we had 3,000 animals at St. Francis, and more than 10% of the injured animals were the victims of people's pets, and mostly cats. So it's a win-win situation to have a cat as an indoor pet.
Right. And I know I've heard you say that even maybe if your cat is playing with a baby bird and the baby bird looks uninjured, actually it could die just from that interaction.
Yes. Cats have a bacteria in their saliva and on their claws that can be lethal to other animals. So if it has even a small puncture wound, unless the animal receives antibiotics very quickly, it's going to die.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that brings us to the question of if you are someone who finds yourself in that situation, maybe your cat got out accidentally and it did trap a baby bird, what are the steps you should take as a person who cares about the welfare of animals in our community?
Well, we would ask people to bring us the baby bird, and we'll start it on antibiotics and help it recover. And then we will, when it's all better, we will return it to the habitat that it inhabits naturally.
Definitely. Well, I want to thank Brian for his call and remind everyone listening that they can join our conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234. They can also call us at 1-800-926-8809 if they're outside the Tallahassee area, or send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. Lisa, we started the top of the show. We talked a little bit about Everett the puppy. I know a lot of people in our community have probably heard his story. He's under your care now mm-hmm. at the Leon County Humane Society. Can you briefly tell us that story and give us a quick update on how the puppy's doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we received a call from somebody out in Liberty County that we had helped previously when they had come upon a circumstance with animal hoarding and neglect. And Liberty County is one of the many counties around us that have absolutely no resources for their animals. So they have no animal control, no animal shelter. When a person finds an animal that's been injured or one that's being neglected, they often have to call law enforcement that really they can't assist. They don't have the tools necessary. They don't have the resources necessary. So this was one of a few cases we've done out there. All we knew at that time was the dog was injured. We just saw, you know, social media is powerful. And somebody had a thread running of a picture of a puppy at a school. And they weren't able to catch him. I don't know how this puppy managed for many days in this condition, but he was, you know, going between portables and he was kind of dragging himself along. And we had a volunteer go out there that day and they were able to catch him. And once she had him, you know, she immediately took him to Northwood Animal Hospital for emergency treatment. It was after hours, and the dog's injuries were just awful. So after x-rays, the doctors were able to determine that it was done by a gunshot at close range. So we know this was an intentional act. Mm-hmm. Majority of his front leg was gone, and his back leg, one of his back legs, was severely infected and injured due to several bullet fragments that had hit it. So this puppy is a little fighter, and those are the kind of cases we get, cases where, you know, you have to make that decision. Is it more humane to let the dog go at that point and humanely euthanize it? Or, you know, do you try to treat, and does it have a potential for a great quality of life afterwards? And, you know, the doctor said he's a fighter. He's eating. He's obviously been like this for several days. I think it's worth trying. And that dog is just spectacular. He's now in a foster home. Bucklake Animal Hospital has been taking care of all of his care. They've been doing daily laser treatments, and they amputated what was left of that front leg. And they've been caring for the back leg, which is healing up really well. And he is in a foster home where he is being loved on like crazy, and learning how to become a dog because he had not been socialized prior. And I mean, now we're greeted with tail wags, and you know, he's seeking attention. So I think his outcome's going to be a good one.
All right, it's great to hear that it sounds like he's recovering well. I think that people would be pleased to hear about that. And I understand you found some of his family members as well.
Mm-hmm. So the following day, one of the teachers at the school called and said there was a family of dogs that had been spotted at the school about a week prior, but they hadn't been seen since, and they thought that that may have been his family. And sure enough, the next day they called and said those dogs are out here again. So we were able to go out there that morning, and within about 15 minutes, lure mom and catch her and set traps, and within 2 days we had everybody.
All right, and we'll get back into that right after this quick break. Hello, and welcome back to Perspectives. Today, we're talking about protecting our animals and pets in our North Florida community. Remember, you can join that conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area. Or if you're in the Tallahassee area, call us at 414-1234. You can also send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. And before the break, Lisa, we were talking a little bit about, we were getting an update on that sad story about the puppy Everett, who was intentionally harmed and was found at a Liberty County school. And you were saying you found members of his family as well. They seem to be in better health. Is that a correct understanding?
Well, they weren't injured in that way, but they were definitely neglected. So all of them were underweight. Mom is heartworm positive, which is common and what we had expected as her, as she's obviously been an outside dog. Most of them, I think actually all of them, were being treated for tick-borne illness because they were covered in fleas and ticks. But, I mean, they're in foster homes, they're with other dogs, they're becoming very, very social, and I believe two of the three puppies were fixed this week, and so they'll actually be available for adoption pretty soon.
Okay, and they have been placed in foster homes. One of the last notices that I saw about them is that we were still looking for foster homes for them.
The last one went into a foster home yesterday morning.
Great. And Ralph, I want to turn to you, Ralph DeMeo, to talk a little bit about, I think people hearing this story are probably frustrated to hear that animals could be treated in this way and might want to know, you know, what's available, what laws are available to help stop this kind of behavior and what repercussions might a person face?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I want to comment at the outset that people in this community may not realize how blessed we are to have the kinds of programs that we do and the kind of organizations that you're hearing from today. I travel all over the state and meet people, and they're amazed at the level of support we get here. So I think it's important for the public to know that. They have a very active local government that fully supports wildlife and domestic pet issues. They support the shelter. The City Commission established the Animal Crimes Task Force a few years ago, and this question that you just asked me is one of the things that is the focus of the task force. I've been serving on that from the beginning, and we pulled together law enforcement, animal control, and others to talk about how we can do a better job of enforcing the existing laws and, in some cases, strengthening the laws. My organization actually worked with the city a few years ago to strengthen the local animal code, and we're actually seeing that bear some fruit. We also have a responsible pet ownership course in which if there's a civil citation issued by an animal control officer, much like traffic school, they can check a box and take a course that we offer every few months. And if they successfully pass the test, then the ticket will be expunged. And we use that as an opportunity to educate them. The laws are good, but they could be better. Cruelty is, of course, one of the big issues that we deal with all the time, where animals are being abused or severely neglected. And there are civil and criminal violations that we can prosecute. One of the things my organization does is we also support the city in its efforts to pursue those types of issues in courts. And then there are state laws. There are state cruelty laws and others that are effective in helping to address animal welfare issues. But again, even though Florida is considered a progressive state in terms of animal welfare laws, there's a lot more that can be done. One of our greatest successes recently was that my law firm was part of the legal team that successfully placed Amendment 13 on the ballot, which was adopted by 70% of the voters last November, and it banned greyhound racing in Florida, which is a significant problem in Florida. And we see those poor greyhounds showing up in the shelters, and unfortunately, many of them are injured, neglected, and died. And we used our existing legal system to impress upon the powers that be the importance of that, and the public agreed with us. So there's things like that that we can do. A real issue that we deal with a lot is, unfortunately, hoarding. Animal hoarding is a problem, even in our community. So the animal control officers and the veterinarians swoop in and they take over the animals when they can, get court orders. Dog fighting is a problem in North Florida. And we've had a number of fairly high-profile busts recently. And again, the animal shelter staff comes in and supports that effort. So there are a lot of laws and a lot of people that are enforcing those laws. And things are changing in a very positive way in that regard.
Great. I appreciate that update. I want to pivot just briefly here because it looks like we've got another caller on the line. So we'll go ahead and go to our phones here. On line one, we've got Steven. Steven, hello and welcome to Perspectives.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yes, okay.
Hi, now, Stephen, do you have question for our panel?
Yes, what I wanted to say is something to the effect of, we're talking about animal welfare, and of course animals are not just domestic animals, stray animals, there's wildlife, and that means, of course, habitat protection. Now, what I see going on around Tallahassee and Leon County is a lot more of a push for growth and development than I see of any other endeavor, which of course entails loss of habitat. So I know you've got a representative from the city, and I find it ironic that at the same time the city's saying how important wildlife is as well as canopy, they're going ahead and promoting all of this development of otherwise undeveloped lands. You've also got on your panel a person from St. Francis who came in when the city was entertaining the idea of the trap, spay, neuter, release program for cats, and she spoke out against that, saying how cats were a threat to wildlife populations. I later saw her, and at the city commission meeting later, I said I find it to be quite questionable any human being questioning some other species for impacts to wildlife. I've never seen that same person from St. Francis come in and question developments. So I think if we're going to get serious about animal welfare, we need to reassess our priorities.
Okay, Stephen, I think we take your point there. Thank you so much for making those points here on Perspectives. Sandy, I might want to go to you here. I think the point that Stephen was making is that there needs to be a balance here. If we're going to continue development in our community, we do need to keep our wildlife in mind. Is that something that St. Francis works to educate people about?
Absolutely. And I'd like to just jump back to Ralph for a second. I'm so happy that you have a program that is educating people because it's so important. There's a program called First Strike, and the premise is that if people are cruel to animals, that there's a high likelihood they're going to continue being cruel and transfer that to people. Now, it is so important to protect wildlife habitat, as this caller mentioned. That's the number one problem wildlife have is loss of habitat, whether it's a gopher tortoise or a fox or an owl, they're all losing habitat. And we are certainly having conversations with the city and the county about how to develop land, how to create developments that are more friendly to wildlife, that save habitat for wildlife. For example, wildlife corridors, you know, create, instead of fragmenting wildlife habitat where they have to cross roads to get from one suitable habitat to the next, you know, create a wildlife corridor that is going to provide a safe route for wildlife. So these are certainly things that we're discussing with developers and with the city and county.
Mm-hmm. Reagan, may I comment on that?
Oh, certainly.
I've been the outside environmental counsel for the city of Tallahassee for almost 35 years, and I can assure you, contrary to the misperception that might be out there, that the city is very environmentally conscious. We've won awards for our environmental consciousness. And ask any local developer or home builder in this town, and they will tell you they have to jump through a lot of hoops to get their projects approved. And one of the key considerations is the effect on deforestation, as a result of deforestation and stormwater runoff and any pollution issues. And they look at habitat issues too. If there are threatened and endangered species, they're not going to be able to develop in that area, for example. So Sandy's doing a great job of making sure that everyone's aware of those issues as it relates to wildlife, but the city, in fact, is very committed to those issues.
Mm-hmm. Something that I think touches on this subject, too, is the idea of protecting wildlife within our developed areas. Maybe I live in a suburban neighborhood, but we've already talked about how keeping my cat indoors might help protect the various bird species that live there. Sandy, are there other things that I can do to make my backyard a friendlier place that would support wildlife?
Absolutely. We get so many calls and emails about raccoons and foxes and coyotes. Even downtown, in Midtown, there's a raccoon in my driveway. Can you come and trap him? No, we can't. The state actually frowns on that. If you're going to remove a raccoon or a raccoon family, you're just opening up a space for others to move in. So the way to coexist with wildlife is to remove the things that are attracting it to your house or your porch. That would mean feeding your pets inside. Cleaning up around your bird feeders. If animals are burrowing under your house, use quarter-inch hardware cloth to seal up any hole. Even if it appears really small, animals are really good at squeezing through small holes. So just remove the attractants, seal up pathways, and learn to coexist with wildlife.
All right. And I want to go back to our phone lines. It looks like we've got another caller here. Michelle, hello, and welcome to Perspectives.
Yes. Are you ready for my question?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I have a comment about the last commenter's comment, which is I think in Tallahassee, it'd be nice if we developed up instead of out and avoided sprawl and developed pieces of property that are lying fallow, so to speak, and sort of use that. But that's not exactly what I was calling for. My question to Ralph was, what moving forward in the legislature can be done to make us the most progressive state with regard to animal welfare. What's left to be done? What are some of the ideas you have? And also, thank you, Ralph, for all your work. You've done such great work statewide and with the animal law section of the Florida Bar. And all the folks on the program today have done really great work to help us be aware about animals. And I just wanted to say how grateful I am. And that's it.
Great, Michelle. Thank you so much for your question. Ralph DeMeo, do you want to
speak
on that?
Thank you again, Michelle, for all you do as well. We are working very hard with state legislatures and local governments all across the state to strengthen animal laws. And we've had success in that regard. Specifically, probably the hottest issue right now, I have an article in front of me from the American Bar Association June journal issue, Are Pets Assets or Part of the Family? Traditionally, in states such as Florida, a pet was considered what used to be called in the common law a chattel or a thing, having no greater legal status than this desk we're sitting at or a car. But that is changing. Courts are increasingly recognizing that animals have intrinsic value and that we have personal relationships with them. So we are working very hard in the legislature to strengthen the animal cruelty laws, the dog fighting laws, to pass laws to make it harder for hoarding to occur, and to recognize that animals have this intrinsic value and to enhance their status. And I think if we continue those efforts, we will see that animals will, including wildlife, will get greater protections. Another issue related to this is the treatment, or as is more accurate to say, the mistreatment of farm animals. Farm animals really is where you see the greatest volume of abuses. And I mentioned earlier, I'm a lifelong vegetarian. One of the things you can do to try to prevent or minimize the suffering of farm animals is to stop eating them. I'm sure some people will disagree with that, but that's something that I feel very strongly about. So again, to Michelle's point, we're working very hard with the legislature. We've had success with it. And the last point I want to make on this is a bipartisan issue. I've been pleasantly surprised to see that we get Republican and Democratic support at the highest levels of leadership. A good example of that was the Greyhound ban. We had the support of the leadership in the state legislature and at the governor's office for the ban, and that's one of the reasons it passed. And I think we just have to keep up those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, you talked a lot about the importance of people using their voice, like with the Greyhound ban. That came a lot from, you know, voters using their voice, pushing that movement forward. And Lisa, I want to go back to something that you were talking about in the beginning of our show, which was the power of social media. And I want to talk a little bit about how using your voice in social media, even maybe on a more local level, can help organizations like yours help animals. What could I do if I'm a person who cares about the work that you're doing and I want to use my voice through social media to help promote care for our pets in the area?
Well, social media is amazing for our causes because it not only works to promote the causes, but it brings awareness to others that don't see our daily struggles in terms of animal welfare, and it also helps to educate. So it's so night and day when you go from working in this field in Tallahassee to driving 45 minutes out. I mean, it really is. It's very hard for people to understand unless you go and see it. We have so many resources here. We have, through the Leon County Humane Society, we have a pet food pantry. We have spay-neuter vouchers available through different organizations. We have an animal shelter here. And you drive out of this county, and there are so many places where they have nothing. Or if they do have an animal shelter, it's barren. They don't have volunteers. They have very little staff. They don't have resources for the animals. So, you know, if somebody is inclined to help, then I automatically would urge them to just go to their social media platforms and just look up if there's a rescue in their area, if there's a shelter in their area that they can get involved in and help in some way. And then the awareness factor is huge as well. I mean, dogfighting, you know, we hear, we as a public hear about these really big cases that where law enforcement worked together for months to make these bust. But in all reality, these fights go on pretty much every weekend in these counties, but it's a matter of bringing awareness to communities so that if they start seeing things or hearing things that might be suspicious and might lead them to think that there's a dogfighting ring in their community, maybe they should contact law enforcement, even if anonymously, and just give them a lead. I mean, there's so many ways that social media can help us these days. And rather than just, you know, posting or sharing sad pictures, people really need to think of ways that they can utilize those avenues to help.
Yeah, definitely. Michael St. John, I want to go to you. We just have about a minute here before our next break. But you work with the Tallahassee Animal Services Center. What ways do you want to see people helping the work that you do more?
Well, there are several things. First of all, support your shelter. You know, we're here to help you. We're not just a dog pound. We want to provide resources. We have a monthly rabies and microchip clinic that's low cost so that people in the community can get identification for their pets, get them vaccinated. So we want to help out in a lot of ways. We give out vouchers. We have a program where, you know, if people are in need of something to help them keep their pet in their home, we try to provide that. So that's one of the first things. The second thing, and we may have to talk about this more after the break, but we do have an animal cruelty, animal abusers registration here. Mm-hmm. And there's a way that you can help us with that as well.
Great, and we'll get back into that after the break. Welcome back to Perspectives. Today we're talking about efforts throughout the North Florida community to care for our animals as well as our pets. Remember, you can join that conversation by giving us a call at 414-1234. You can also call us at 1-800-926-8809 if you're outside the Tallahassee area, or send us an email at perspectives@wfsu.org. We do have a caller here on our phone line, so we'll go ahead and go straight into that call. Marcos, hello, and welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
So I just basically wanted to make a quick comment about animal welfare in general. I think animal welfare and environmental preservation kind of go hand in hand. I think it's very important that we educate everybody in the public that the animal agriculture industry is contributing to climate change, and it's a very serious problem. And environmental destruction is one big part of that, along with the destruction of our oceans. And there's just a lot of other factors that come into play with that. And one of the best things that everybody can do to contribute to helping this problem is to not eat animals.
Okay. And do you have a question for our panel, Marcos?
No, I don't really have a question. I guess that I just wanted to make that comment, just make that a note of that, that it's just a very important thing that everybody should be aware of.
Great. Thanks for the call. I appreciate your time. So, Ralph, we were talking a little bit before about the importance of looking out for our farm animals in our community. You said that often that they are one of the groups of animals that face more abuse than most of the other animals in our community. What can people do if they're concerned about that? What are some ways to better advocate for farm animals, or really any animals that they're concerned
about?
Yeah,
that's a great question. As I mentioned, it's perhaps the most controversial issue nationally and even internationally, because even under the federal animal welfare laws, farm animals or animals used for food are exempt from those laws, and most wildlife are too. So really, in terms of orders of magnitude where the abuse and neglect takes place, it's not with domestic animals like our puppies, our kitties, our horses. I agree with the last caller. You know, we live in a consumer nation. If you stop the demand, the supply will go away. It's really that simple. But I realize that we're in our carnivorous society. Not all societies thrive on meat, and you don't have to eat meat. But recognizing the reality of that, I think we just have to continue to work to improve the anti-agricultural cruelty laws. Ag-gag laws are a big issue where major producers of chickens and beef and the like will try to stifle the ability of people to publicize the abuses that go on, and they go on, and they go on at virtually all the facilities. Not all of them, but virtually all of them. So being able to cast the public eye on that. Somebody said to me once that if, and I think Paul McCartney made this famous statement, that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the general public has any idea about the abuses that go on in these facilities. And I think if they did, my impression of most people is still a positive one, that they would be concerned about it. So again, just strengthening the laws, getting the word out, and on the grassroots level, eat plants.
All right. Oh, Lisa, yes.
Yeah, can I jump in there as well? So like Ralph, I've been a vegetarian for, I don't know, since I can remember, from a young age. But my family doesn't follow that same, ideology when it comes to that. And little changes can make such a difference. My husband, anything meat was always, his staple. But the little changes, and I think really kind of getting more in tune with animals, and he's had the ability to foster a couple potbelly pigs, and I think that enlightened him into how intelligent these animals are and how emotional they are, literally just like a dog. I think that has made a difference in him, and he has been able to make small differences in terms of eating the same type of veggie burgers that I do several nights a week. All of our eggs now that come in the house are cage-free, organic. If we can get something local from friends, we do. Dairy, people think about eating meat, but honestly, the dairy industry is huge when it comes to pollution and the cruelties that go on with cows. So even the changes to, some kind of almond milk or something like that, those little changes, it doesn't mean you have to take the full leap, but there's absolutely a huge connection there. So if you're very, very concerned about the environment, then this is a huge step that you should consider making.
And if you have a physician who is nutritionally aware, he or she will tell you that eating low on the food chain is more healthful as well for people.
That's exactly right. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, Sandy, if I may. Traditional medical schools don't teach nutrition. And they work closely with the pharmaceutical industries and with the major ag businesses. But we're starting to see that change, as we are with attitudes towards animals in general. And more doctors, especially the younger ones, are starting to pay more attention to nutrition. And as Sandy says, the evidence is overwhelming that eating lower on the food chain, if not completely eliminating, minimizing eating meat, it does make a difference. And to the earlier point about environment, the number one source of the types of pollution that concern us the most are not human activities, they're animals and they're animal-related activities. And they produce a tremendous amount of runoff from these waste pits, which you hear about from time to time, from hog farms and from chicken farms. Methane gas from cows, believe it or not, is a major source. It's not the things that people tend to think of, like cars or factories. So there is no question that there's a connection between animal welfare and environmental protection.
All right. I want to shift gears here a little bit and start talking a little bit about the importance of adopting animals. I know that Michael and Lisa, that's something that both your organizations really work to advocate. Michael, maybe I'll jump to you. If I'm interested in a pet, can I get one from you?
Absolutely. And people, they tend to think that, they're only not desirable breeds at shelters, and that's not at all true. I've seen just about every breed since I've been there of dogs, unusual cats. There's absolutely no reason to go anywhere other than a shelter or a rescue group, humane society. With social media, there's so much available online now. You can look at our websites and see what we have there. Where we have volunteers and staff that are ready to help you with. You tell us about your lifestyle and what you're looking for, and we'll try to make a match for you with what we have. And we at least have a policy that if it does, you adopt, you go home. If it doesn't work out for somebody that's not the best fit, come back. We'll try again. You know, that's something we encourage, and especially with some of the abuses that go on in the breeding industry, we would certainly encourage people to avoid those types of things, because there are a lot of non-reputable breeders out there, and there are so many good animals that are looking for homes and, you know, just would make such good fits for your families.
That's another area that we're working on, statewide laws to allow local governments to prohibit pet shops and puppy mills. And there are many, many local governments in Florida that are doing that. Actually, we've been discussing that in the city of Tallahassee as well. But on the grassroots level, you can help minimize the number of animals that end up in the shelter by only adopting shelter animals and not through puppy mills or cat mills or even pet shops.
Mm-hmm. So a question on that idea of why you should adopt. I've fostered dogs for a local animal rescue. I'm certainly a proponent of puppies and adoption. But just to maybe play devil's advocate here, Lisa, I was looking at the Leon County Humane Society's Facebook page recently, and it was talking about a puppy who was being returned to the Humane Society because its family's life circumstances had changed. I wonder what you would say to people who say, well, that's because they adopted it from a shelter. There's not as much maybe buy-in required when you pick up a puppy from a shelter. There's not as much thought required. You just go there and you pick them up, versus if I carefully research a breed and I carefully find a good family who's taking great care of their, you know, breeding parents, and I pay my thousands of dollars for this, you know, specific purebred puppy I want, you know, am I more likely to really commit to them in that situation, or what do we do about that?
Well, just in terms of, I think, the process of adoption, it differs between shelters and rescue groups. As Michael said, you know, we really want to see it as a matchmaking process. So we really, at the Humane Society, work with people to, it's not perfect every time, and you can't control, what happens with the family later on. But we always want to make sure that with the Leon County Humane Society, if that animal is going to come to us years down the road, we want to make sure that it comes back to us rather than go on Craigslist or to a shelter that we don't know or anything like that. So we're always out there as a safety net. But we want to make sure if we've got an elderly person looking for a companion pet and they have mobility issues, we're not going to match them with a 2-month-old lab puppy, and there's a way in talking with people to open the conversation and really try to make them understand that we're looking for not only their best interest, but ultimately for us, it comes down to that animal. We want to make sure that we're putting it in a positive environment. So it's definitely a matchmaking thing with us. And if somebody has considered adopting, but they're really not totally convinced yet, maybe they try fostering. As you mentioned fostering before, and fostering for us is absolute life-saving. With the Leon County Humane Society, we take a lot of infant animals. We take a lot of animals with extra medical need. And a lot of senior animals. And those animals in general will always go into foster homes. All of our dogs go into foster homes. And I tell you what, it gets at times defeating feeling, because you feel like you've got a small team of animal welfare professionals in this area that are trying to clean up a huge community problem when it comes to pets being dumped at animal shelters or abandoned. And fostering is awesome, because I think a lot of people have a perception that if an animal is in a rescue group or in a shelter, that it's unwanted for a reason and that it's not a great pet and that it's, it may have issues. I tell you what, majority of the animals that I bring into my house are easier than my own, because they are just happy and content to have a safe place. I bring in adult dogs primarily into my house, and majority of the time they're crate trained. They're house trained immediately. They're well behaved. We work with fosters that have other pets and kids to make sure that we're putting animals in their home that will do well. So, I mean, fostering or adopting, it's always going to be a matchmaking process, and adopters should have that same kind of patience with adopting a pet that they would if they were looking into purchasing and getting a puppy and waiting through that period.
Yeah. Give us some more details for somebody who might be interested in fostering. What steps should they take?
First, they should absolutely go to our website, fill out a foster application. One of our program coordinators will contact them to see what they might be interested in fostering. But with fostering, a foster parent basically is that safe place for the animal, provides socialization for the animal, and maybe transport to a couple vet appointments. But we will provide the kennel, the food, all the medical care, toys, blankets, anything you could think of. You are just that life-saving space. And I mean, it literally, we at any given time have a list of about 10 dogs that we're wanting to pull into our program for shelters where they're at high risk. But without that space, we can't do that. So, and that goes the same with kittens. I mean, it is showering kittens in Tallahassee right now. And the only way we can place bottle baby kittens or four-week-old kittens, the only way we can take them in is if we have foster space available. So if somebody has even thought about it, it's worth just giving us a call or filling out that application. Let us talk to you and see if it might be something that you might fall in love with.
It's a great experience. I've fostered a lot of different animals, including horses. And it really is a very, very rewarding experience.
Yeah.
And we have a similar foster program at the animal shelter. Same as Lisa, we have a list of animals waiting to go into homes because we do need that safety net there when we get so many, and especially with the kittens. We also have a program called Wait Till 8 because we just don't have the resources to 24 hours a day, you know, take care of these little neonate kittens. So we have people call in, or animal control will encounter them in the field, and they found a litter of kittens and no mother present, or the mother's been hit by a car. And what we offer is a program where we'll provide the supplies for you and a big instruction booklet on how to do it. And if you're willing to just nurse those kittens until they're 8 weeks old, bring them in and we'll make sure they get homes.
Mm-hmm. That brings up the idea of community cats. So you guys both mentioned a little bit, we've got a lot of these kittens that are coming in. I've heard when speaking with people before that in a lot of cases, when I find some cats that are living out in a parking lot somewhere, even if I find a litter of kittens, it might be best to leave them where they are.
Yes. When you say kittens, if they're too young to eat on their own and there's no mom present and the mom doesn't show back up, or you know that something's happened to the mother, in that case, then they need care. If there's a family of kittens out there, they're living in the community, or if there are cats that you see in the community, our best advice is let them be. Because it may either be someone's cat and they're just out roaming and they're going to go back home, or it may be a situation where you do have a community cat that just lives in the area and kind of goes from place to place and eats. As we say, cats are the new squirrel. We do have a lot of cats out there that they're just, you know, feral cats living, or just community cats that are somewhat friendly, but they're not pets. They're, they're used to being outside. They're living there. They're clearly doing okay. So we do recommend in those situations that you leave them alone. The problem with cats is that we have a very low reclaim rate on cats. People that bring in animals into the shelter as strays, they usually are not reclaimed. Sometimes they're adopted, sometimes they're not. And so in that situation, they were probably better off where they were.
Mm-hmm. The city's policy right now is what's sometimes referred to as trap, neuter, and release, and that's essentially what they do. It's controversial. I know Sandy has some strong views on it. But in those communities in Florida and in the rest of the states where that has been implemented, eventually, sooner than later, it cuts down on the community cat, or what used to be called feral cat, population, and it cuts down on predatory behavior towards wildlife. But it takes time to get to that point.
Right. We found that trapping cats and trying to remove them from the area, trapping them, bringing them into the shelter. What tends to happen there is that there's clearly a food resource, so other cats are going to move in. So that doesn't solve the problem if that's what you're trying to do, is to get rid of cats in your area.
Not only other cats will move in, but raccoons will move in and other wildlife. And it creates a concentration of animals where disease can be spread very quickly.
Sandy, I want to give you a few moments. We've just got a few moments left before the end of our show here to talk to you about. We talked about it's baby season. We're getting a lot of kittens in. Also, I assume we're seeing a lot of baby squirrels, baby birds. What should someone do in just a minute here when they find some of those animals?
Yes, this is baby season. We have 350 babies at St. Francis now. If you find a baby bird on the ground and it's mostly naked, it might have some downy feathers, put it back in the nest. It's a myth that the parents will not accept it if you've touched it. If it has most of its feathers, maybe short tail feathers, leave it on the ground. It jumped out of the nest while it was exercising its wings.
We'll have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. Perspectives is produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance is provided by Evan Rossi. With Lydell Rawls on the phones, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.